Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Bennington, Vermont. This talk from Sunday, October 13th, 2024, is by the Reverend Barbara Threat on the topic of comfort and affliction.
What is a Unitarian Universalist congregation for? What is this particular congregation for? What's our purpose? What makes a UU congregation different from other groups or similar to them? And what difference do we make, or can we make, or should we make in the world? Last year, several members of our fellowship, along with others from the Rutland UU Church and Glens Falls UU congregation, where I also serve as minister, gathered on Zoom for a class called What Moves Us? We explored the lives of influential Unitarians and Universalists and Unitarian Universalists from the last three centuries, considering three questions for each of them. Why did they do what they did? What difference did it make at the time? And what difference does that make now? And several people suggested that I write a sermon to further explore the work of James Luther Adams. One of those people is in the room today. This is not a history sermon, though, so I'll tell you only three sentences about Adams. First, he was widely considered to be the leading Unitarian theologian of the 20th century. Second, he had very strong opinions about churches. And third, he taught for many years at Harvard Divinity School, which trains many of our UU ministers. And he also taught at Meadville Lombard, which is one of the two specifically Unitarian seminaries, which means that all those students were exposed to his ideas. And since his writing is still required reading for everyone preparing for UU ministry, I think now we're required to read 7 or 8 of his books or essays. The rest of us are also heavily influenced by Adams. If you'd like to know more about him after hearing this sermon, I will happily give you the class material. But there will be no more biography this morning. Instead, I'm focusing on how his ideas affect our churches now, and on what he would say we can become. In a nutshell, he believed that liberally religious churches exist to serve more than just themselves. They exist, he says, to make a difference in the world. I want to point out that while he used the word church to describe a religious body, I now serve this UU fellowship, as well as two other UU groups that call themselves a church and a congregation. I've also served the UU Society, and a group that just called itself the Unitarian Universalists of San Mateo, since they couldn't agree on any of those terms. Fellowship has a specific historical meaning for UUs, which I won't get into at all today. And since I'm talking about Adams, and since church is the shortest of those words and the most widely recognizable, that's the term I'll stick with today. Now, back to Adams. At his core, he believed churches should serve a purpose larger than just caring for themselves. A purely spiritual church, he wrote, is a purely spurious church. Former UUA President John Behrens wrote that Adams sought to critique the genteel passivity and detached idealism that he found so pervasive among many Unitarians, and now it would be Unitarians Universalists. Adams certainly wanted us to offer encouragement and support within our congregations. That's an essential function of any congregation. He also urged us to address injustices in the larger world and to work to correct them. Liberal religion that matters, Adams believed, is about more than words. But what, you might ask, does he mean by a liberal religion? Adams insisted that liberal religion that matters, the religiously liberal church that matters, has 5 characteristics. First, it continues to learn and question. It's open to new information and new inspiration, including new ideas about religion itself. Therefore, religious liberals need to be willing to update or even discard some of our opinions and practices. Second, the liberal religion is a voluntary organization. It rests on mutual consent and not coercion, and we'll explore that in depth in a few minutes. Third, liberal religion claims as a central tenet the obligation to work for a just and loving community, both for itself and in the larger world. Fourth, liberal religion asserts that we humans can affect our lives and our future. We don't believe that we're controlled by any outside omnipotent force. Social change, he said, reminds us, is more than any one person can do alone. And putting justice into practice requires more than one person. Saying that I believe in just human relationships if I live in a cave by myself doesn't really mean much. It's in community that we get to live out those things. And fifth, religious liberalism has a sense of what Adams called ultimate optimism, not immediate optimism. When he wrote, before World War II, there was plenty that was far from optimistic in the world, and that's certainly the case now. But ultimate optimism is the confidence that things can get better. Liberal religion believes that it's worth time to work for justice on this world now, because it's possible that the world can become more just and more equitable. In summary, liberal religion keeps an open mind institutionally. It trusts its volunteer nature. It's dedicated to creating a more just world. It emphasizes the power of humans here on Earth and our ability to affect what happens on Earth. And it believes that a better world is possible and that it's worth working for. That's a tall order. It's easy, even for us UUs, to decide that we have the final answer as to how to approach a particular social justice issue. It's easy to focus so heavily on our own congregation that we find ourselves doing little for the wider world. At times, it's really hard to be optimistic about the possibility of change or progress in our own lives and certainly in the larger world. Sometimes it's hard to know even how to talk about some of the situations we face. I think of how complicated it is even to have a conversation about the Middle East now, and how hard it is for me to see any possibility of more justice there. If I had a working magic wand, and I don't even know where I would start with that situation. Sometimes what seems easiest is to just ignore controversial or overwhelming issues, especially the ones that don't affect us directly and that seem so complex. But Adams believed that all five of those aspects of a church were possible and achievable and essential. And so does our Unitarian Universalist Association, at least at its best moments. His ideas really do infuse this church and all of our churches. For Adams, the idea that our liberal churches are voluntary associations has special significance. It's one of the most central ideas of his work. Every UU congregation is a voluntary association. You in the pews or on Zoom choose to be here on any given Sunday. We don't live in a time or a place or a culture where there's tremendous pressure to be part of any religious group, actually. As UUs, we don't believe that God demands that you attend church regularly. You come because you want to be here. There are many reasons for that choice, and they may vary over time. Perhaps it's just habit. It's what you do every Sunday morning. Maybe the sermon topic intrigues you or you really want to hear the music. There are people who come because they want to see others who become friends. Maybe you just crave an hour in this really lovely space. Or you have church business to attend to and you know the people you need to talk to will be here. Perhaps you just want to get out of the house for an hour. There are many reasons to attend a UU church, but being here is voluntary in a way that isn't true for every faith. Nobody will arrest you or shame you in any way if you don't attend, not even God. It extends further. Each UU church decides for itself how to allocate its resources and what paid staff it will have. No outside body determines that, and that isn't true for all churches either. Any member in a UU congregation decides to get more or less involved at any time. And each staff member, including the minister, can leave if they wish. There's no larger body that says, you have to stay in this place. And as voluntary associations, we rely heavily on the voluntary activities of each of you, putting out the hymnals in the morning, shoveling off the sidewalk, all those things. We all have a role. And what difference does it make that we're each voluntary associations composed of members and staff and even a minister who is here because they want to be? What's the big deal about people choosing to come together anyhow, whether it's in a hiking club or an investors group, a community chorus or an AA meeting or a cancer survivors gathering, or a UU congregation? What difference does it make? Adams believed it made a lot of difference. First, he reminds us that at this time and in this country, we have the right to join such an association of people, and that right is not inevitable. Adams spent a few years in Germany just prior to World War II, and he was keenly aware of what it is to not have the choice as to what organization to join or whether to join. In Nazi Germany, as in many other places throughout history, many organizations were banned or they were mandatory. I think of Afghanistan now, where females past a certain age cannot gather for education, and public gatherings for women are banned. In our own country, until relatively recently, people with skin of a certain color or certain accent were banned from public parks or excluded from certain clubs and activities. In pre-World War II Germany, Adams saw organizations that claimed to be voluntary, but weren't really voluntary at all. Joining them was essential to keeping one's job or avoiding arrest or other harassment. The fact that we can, at this time and place, choose which groups to be affiliated with, without fear of recrimination, is not to be taken lightly. And the fact that there are not laws forbidding the existence of organizations or customs that force our participation, that's a radical thing and something to be cherished. We, as a Unitarian Universalist congregation, are such a voluntary association. We certainly rely on one another to do our work, whatever that is, but then what's the overall purpose of our organization? Is it just to shovel snow and put out the hymnals? What do we exist for as a church and a denomination? In a 1962 essay, Adams wrote, "One type of association is the special interest group. Here, the association is judged by its capacity to accrue some sort of personal benefit to members. The other type of association directly aims to promote the general welfare of a larger group, and members of the association do not necessarily expect personal gain. In some of the larger associations, the broad constituency of the membership makes it possible that the gain of members is also a gain for non-members. For example, the civil rights movement that aims to promote the liberty of blacks will, in the long run, increase the productivity of the entire nation. Our efforts are small efforts in terms of climate change. We hope will ripple out, inspire others, and make a difference to the larger world." I can think of several groups that mostly serve themselves, and of others that intentionally have a wider root, a wider reach. And this balance shifts over time. If an organization tries to reach too broadly without any sound internal structure, it'll probably fail on both fronts. And if an organization is exclusively inwardly focused, it may become absolutely insular and get lost in tiny details of its own structure. There are times, I would point out, when an organization needs to prioritize itself. I think of churches in areas that have been devastated by floods recently. But one of the questions we wrestled with in our What Moves Us class is, to what extent do our UU churches exist primarily to serve ourselves? To what extent do we exist to serve or challenge or support the larger community, to bend that arc toward justice, even more love in the world? Are we UUs focused mostly on the comfort of our own congregations, or are we change agents, trying to bring that ultimate optimism, or hope, if you will, to others? Can we do both? What about churches that don't directly engage with the larger world a lot, but who provide tremendous support and community to individuals who are heavily engaged? Where are they on that continuum? In our own church, where is our focus? I think of the words of the 12th century Jewish philosopher Maimonides, who said, "If I am not for myself, then who will be? And if I am only for myself, then what am I?" Adams often contrasted what he called the priestly and prophetic functions of religion. The priest seeks to bring spiritual healing. Its function is caretaking and providing comforting. The prophet confronts injustice and seeks radical spiritual and social transformation. It stirs things up. Adams feared that too many of our congregations emphasize that comfortable priestly role or use the prophetic role only to read books and have discussions. From his essay, The Prophethood of All Believers, "A church that does not concern itself with the struggle in history for human decency and justice, a church that does not show concern for the shape of things to come, a church that does not attempt to interpret the signs of the times and act on them, is not a prophetic church." Adams continues, "We Unitarians have long held to the idea of the priesthood of all believers, the idea that all people have direct access to the ultimate resources of the spiritual life, and that we have the responsibility of achieving an explicit faith for free persons. We need to also hold a firm belief in the prophethood of all believers. The prophetic liberal church is the church in which people think and work together to interpret the signs of times in the light of their faith and then to act on what might bend the times toward justice. The prophetic liberal church is the church in which all members share the common responsibility to attempt to see the consequences of human behavior, both individual and institutional, with the intention of making history instead of merely being pushed around by it." In short, we certainly need to be a church that comforts the afflicted, including the afflicted among ourselves, and all of us will occasionally find ourselves in that category. Adams believed we also need to be willing to afflict the comfortable, at least some of the time, willing to be afflicted ourselves, both within our walls and without. We need to examine how we contribute to societal ills, as individuals and as an institution. The UUA is doing a lot with that recently with their work around racism. We need to be agents for change, acknowledging places of injustice or inequity, even if doing so is unsettling, even when the answers seem very elusive. Adams urges UUs to be part of moving the course of history toward justice, if only slightly. And it's important to recognize that this can be done in many, many ways, some quite grand and some seemingly insignificant. So I'll tell you a story about social justice work that made a difference, and it is a true story. I did my required year of internship in preparation for UU ministry with the UUs of San Mateo, California. And San Mateo is a very comfortable area economically. I needed to do some sort of social justice project during that year, and my supervising minister told me that she would decide on a project. I knew this was very important to the ministerial credentialing body that eventually decides yes, you can, or no, you cannot become a minister, and I waited with great interest to hear what she'd chosen, especially in such an affluent area. She asked for a meeting. "We've been trying for the past 2 years," she started, and I ran through a very impressive list of possibilities in my head. So I was very surprised when she continued, "to get a stop sign on our corner." I was stunned. A stop sign. I needed something involving real effort, with some grand result, and if we get a column in the newspaper, that would be so much the better, and it needed to be something that would impress the credentialing committee. Stop sign. I grumbled quite a bit internally. This is not a social justice issue. But she continued. Our church was on the perimeter of one of the few older, poor, mostly Spanish-speaking enclaves within San Mateo. The rate of traffic accidents was much higher in this neighborhood than most anywhere else in the city. But there were far fewer traffic lights or stop signs. A main street that passed our church, which went into that neighborhood, seemed to invite people to drive too fast, and tall hedges around a city-owned vacant lot on the opposite corner made it very difficult to see who was approaching. So I went to work. I met with some community leaders who told me their frustrations, often in heavily accented English. They had presented petitions to the city planning board to no avail. A senior housing complex a block away was across the street from a senior center that served free meals, and residents with walkers or canes struggled to get across the street. Community leaders had sat out there and counted seniors and sent the numbers in, and no one listened. They had called the highway department to see about removing some of those hedges so that visibility would be better, but nobody called them back. A local paper carried a very upbeat article about a new stoplight in a much wealthier area so that people could more easily reach a shopping center at a corner that was only two blocks from where a light already existed. And in our neighborhood, we couldn't even get a sign to slow traffic so that our seniors could safely cross the street. It began to feel like perhaps there was a bit of social justice component to that situation. So our congregation, along with the senior center and another nearby church, sent another letter to the police explaining, again, why the stop sign on the corner seemed so important. We copied it to the local paper that did print it. We asked for a meeting, and after weeks of stalling, the police finally agreed. We were in the parlor of the UU church, had a window that looked out on that street, and we were listening to the officers explain why a stop sign wasn't needed. He said that people just needed to obey the speed limit, with the strong implication that people who lived in that neighborhood didn't do such things, and a hint that probably some of them didn't have licenses anyhow. We were told that it would take months to determine whether a stop sign was needed. They would need to set up traffic monitors, and there were only a limited number of those available. The list of what felt like justifications went on. And then, as our frustrations mounted, we heard a very loud crash. It was not staged, I swear, but the timing could not have been better. We hurried with the police outside to see two cars that had just collided on our corner. One driver was loudly accusing the other of not looking before he entered the intersection, and the other was loudly proclaiming that he couldn't see oncoming traffic due to the hedge. Why, he wondered quite angrily, didn't the city trim the hedge, or at least put up a stop sign? The officers that we had been meeting with were strangely quiet. They did call a tow truck. They took statements from both drivers. They demanded licenses and insurance, and both drivers had those things. And they told our little group that they would look into the situation, and they left looking a bit cowed. Within a few days, a stop sign appeared. The hedges were radically trimmed so that it was easy to see over them. They went from, I swear, 10 feet tall to about this. And to the delight of the locals, there was an article in the paper about how long it had taken to get that stop sign, with a great picture of the collision. It made a difference, that stop sign. And I learned something important about social action. It's simply doing what's needed. When we take food to the community cafe, when we advocate for fixing the leaks in the roof of the local public school, those things are not huge, and they definitely matter. It's not about the scale of the action or the glamour of the cause. It's about doing what's needed. Our UU church had made a difference to the safety of our neighborhood, and we had helped people to be heard. And those things mattered in our neighborhood. The area was heavily Catholic. I doubt that anyone became UU, even though most people knew that our church had become part of bringing the stop sign. But they knew that we cared about our neighbors, and I think that matters too. Social justice work can be difficult. We will not always agree on what's most important, and we'll have different ideas about how to proceed. Our Unitarian Universalist Association these days is paying a lot of attention to combating racism and addressing white privilege. And not everyone agrees with those priorities or with the methods that are being championed. But the alternative, the admittedly more comfortable way, especially of those who live in rural white Vermont, is to simply ignore those issues. They're too complicated. Most of them don't directly affect us. So it's easy to revert to being priestly, talking about care and compassion and even frankly reading books than it is to be prophetic, to be a little uncomfortable and try to confront those things and change them. So my final question to you, and one that our class considered, is where does our own congregation stand? And I'll insert a plug if you're curious about being part of these discussions, and they have been wonderful. See me afterwards, and I'll tell you what you can do to join. Our next meeting is tomorrow night, so you'd have time to read tonight. There's required reading material, but not a lot. For your consideration this morning, though, are we focused more in this congregation on the priestly or the prophetic aspect? Or do we do both? And if we do, with what balance? There is no single right answer. Every congregation has different needs and strengths, different resources and challenges, and different requirements of how they spend their time at different points in history. But overall, where would you say our focus is now? Where would you like it to be? If you think our focus should be different from what it is now, how can we get there? And if you think it's fine, just perfect where it is, then how can we sustain that? How will we deal with others in the congregation who feel differently? Who are we as a congregation, a fellowship? And why do we exist? And what is our mission as a UU congregation?